This is Peter Hammond in the studio for From the Front Line. Tonight, farms and freedom under fire in South Africa. The National Assembly of the South African Parliament has sent shockwaves around the country and the world by setting in motion a process to change the constitution so as to allow expropriation or confiscation of farmland without compensation. The threat to private ownership of property and the clearly stated intention to remove the constitutional safeguards and protections for private ownership of property has staggered observers. This country is meant to be a land of laws. We're meant to be a constitutional state. And as a result of the negotiations that brought an end to the hostilities back in the early 1990s, the decision was made on the basis of a Bill of Rights which guaranteed freedom of religion, freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of property, all of these foundational freedoms. This motion was adopted by a vote of 241 in support and only 83 against. Those who voted for the motion to confiscate farms without compensation, the African National Congress, the ANC, all of their people, the Economic Freedom Front, the EFF of Julius Malema, they voted for the motion. Voting against it was the Democratic Alliance, the Freedom Front, the Congress of the People, COPE, and the African Christian Democratic Party, the ACDP. So you only had 83 votes against and 241 members of Parliament voting for the process to remove the constitutional safeguards that would allow confiscation of white-owned commercial farms without compensation. One-time ANC leader Moisoyo Lekota, now the leader of COPE, condemned the EFF's tactics as imbecilic and racist. And he condemned the vote as misleading our people for cheap popularity just to win votes. The notion of a stolen land, he said, is a false narrative. We call on the ANC to pronounce themselves unambiguously as to whether they've now changed historic policy and abandoned the Freedom Charter, which is meant to be their foundation, in favor of the racist rhetoric of both the EFF and the PAC. The EFF leader, Julius Malema, has declared that he wants to hit white men hard. We are cutting the throat of whiteness, he said. The DA leader, Mamosi Mayamani, condemned the EFF for its destructive racist policies, calling it madness. It is insane, he said. And the rest of us must agree. Considering the catastrophic consequences of communist land reform in neighboring Zimbabwe, it seems inexplicable that the ANC, the government of South Africa, would want to follow in the footsteps of failure by committing economic suicide. No farms, no food, no future. The London barrister, Malcolm Horne, has commented on the planned land grab in South Africa as follows. He said, you cannot have land expropriation without compensation. It is illegal under international law. It is contrary to a dozen treaties that South Africa has signed and ratified. As such, it is a principle that's also enshrined in South African domestic law. You cannot change the constitution to make it legal. Treaty law is superior law. It always applies. Well, that's a legal mind, but he's, of course, speaking from the realm of law, and he's speaking from the perspective of Britain. That doesn't seem to be a concern for the people who are trying to be the architects of this national economic suicide. And it's not as though we can't see where this is going. We're following in the footsteps of failure here. When Patrice Lumumba, in 1960, violated the constitution and laws of the Congo with nationalizations, the result was carnage, civil war, and total economic collapse. And maybe some people can still remember about the collapse of the Congo in the 1960s. The nationalization of industries and farms in Zambia under Kenneth Kaunda and in Tanzania under Julius Nyerere in the 1960s and 70s brought economic collapse to those countries as well. Although vast amounts of Western foreign aid kept these countries somewhat afloat, the vast majority of the aid was stolen by corruption from the governments themselves. And so we saw these countries going from exporting food to starvation. When Mozambique was granted independence by Portugal in 1975, Samora Machel of the Communist Frelimo movement confiscated all private property, not only farms, but all the way down to even laundromats. And he completely destroyed what was once a vibrant economy. Before independence, Mozambique had exported food. I mean, it's a green country. It's a subtropical country. It's a country where you've literally got palm trees, coconuts, and banana trees. And yet, over 1 million Mozambicans died of starvation after Samora Machel's land reform policies, and the country was torn apart by a vicious civil war. At independence in Zimbabwe in 1980, Julius Nyerere of Tanzania and Samora Machel of Mozambique both warned Robert Mugabe not to make the same mistakes they had done. They urged him to respect property rights and to let Europeans continue to contribute to the economy. And when Mugabe began threatening the white farmers, most media comment was, there should be no concern because Mugabe is an intelligent person and he knows that dispossessing the farmers would be a catastrophe for the country. Yet Robert Mugabe's ZANU-PF government did seize over 5,000 commercial farms and evicted the white farmers, who in many cases were third or fourth generation citizens who had literally carved these farms out of wilderness. But even as Zimbabwe's economy collapsed and more than half of the total population fled the country, voting with their feet, a vote of no confidence in the Marxist Mugabe, most African leaders applauded and cheered Mugabe. Literally, he was given standing ovations in both African Union and Commonwealth and in United Nations venues. So they literally cheered while he imploded his economy and committed agricultural and economic suicide. And the South African president at the time, ANC leader Thabo Mbeki, unquestioningly backed Mugabe's disastrous policies in Zimbabwe and helped keep Zimbabwe from complete bankruptcy through regular financial aid and electricity from South Africa. So even when they were torturing their prisoners with electricity, the electricity often came from Eskom in South Africa. Now, the fall of Jacob Zuma earlier this year and the rise to power of Cyril Ramaphosa as the new president of South Africa, we remember that it was accompanied by a wave of euphoria and many Christians declaring, we are saved, a new day is dawning, now we can begin to rebuild the country, our prayers have been answered. Friends of mine were posting things like that. Yet in his opening State of the Nation address to Parliament, Cyril Ramaphosa announced, we will seize land without compensation. And disturbingly, this was greeted with the loudest and most sustained applause of his address. Now, considering that South Africa provides sanctuary to at least 10 million refugees who have fled the endemic misrule to the north, imploding the food security of South Africa will affect far more than our own population. It'll affect millions of people who have sought refuge here from their countries, which have already had land reform, which resulted in starvation in their countries. We need to remember that in 1994, that's just under 24 years ago, when Nelson Mandela became president of South Africa, we had just 70,000 white commercial farmers. But these 70,000 white commercial farmers were feeding over 100 million people throughout Africa. That's 100 million people fed by 70,000 commercial farms. Today, we have barely 28,000 white commercial farmers left who are able to feed something like 40 million people. That means our farm production has decreased to 40% what it was in 1994. But our population has doubled. The population of South Africa is already in excess of 50 million, more than twice what we had in 1994. And even as the population of the country has doubled, our food production has gone less than half, down to 40% what was in 94. And we now need to say that the food crisis in Africa is about to get a lot worse. So is the refugee crisis. And people in Europe and America who are facing a tsunami of refugees are about to face more if the ANC policies go ahead. Because the African National Congress, the ANC government, has been a complete failure on every level. In 1994, the South African rand was closer to 2 rand to the dollar. In fact, I remember when I was growing up that the South African rand was stronger than the British pound and stronger than the American dollar. And yet today, the South African rand is around 14 rand to the US dollar and about 18 to 19 rand to the British pound. Back in 1994, unemployment was under 3 million, just 2 million point something. Today, unemployment is closer to 30 million. For every year the African National Congress, the ANC, have been in power, they've added another million unemployed people to the ranks of the unemployed. Now, you would have thought that the power failures, the water restrictions, the rampant crime, the rape, the murder, which has become everyday realities for the long-suffering people of South Africa, would have caused them to have some heart-searching and thinking, you know, our policies aren't working, let's rethink this. But instead, they come up with smoke screens to distract from their failure and their corruption, to distract citizens from the disastrous failure and catastrophic corruption of the ANC government. Lies and distortions and disinformation and fabrications and misleading statistics and campaigns of guilt manipulation, making scapegoats out of the white minority, have been manufactured to create a smokescreen, which is designed to cover the rampant corruption and incompetence of the ANC. You know, if somebody's trying to pick your pocket, they need to distract you. To be able to loot an entire country, you need a lot of smokescreen and distraction. And whites have been demonized and made scapegoats for every problem in the country. Even after over 23 years of ANC rule, nothing is accepted as their fault. Nothing. Nothing's their fault. Instead, irresponsible politicians have engaged in the most reckless rabble-rousing and hate-mongering, which threaten to subject and subvert the very fabric of society. At his presidential inauguration in 1994, Nelson Mandela declared, "Never, never, never again will any South African be discriminated against on the basis of their race." Well, that's what he said. But immediately, this promise was followed by affirmative action, black economic empowerment, racial quotas, even in sports teams, all of which only succeeded in chasing away investors, employers, entrepreneurs, and tourists, increasing unemployment. Today, more than half of the total white population of South Africa that was here in 94 has left the country, has voted with their feet, a vote of no confidence, have left. And so we have got more white South Africans living outside of the country in Australia, New Zealand, Canada, America, Britain, and so on, South America, than are living in South Africa itself. And every one of those people who were skilled people would have employed anything from 8 to 10 unskilled workers. And therefore, what we've done by chasing away these people is we've chased away employers and taxpayers and entrepreneurs. And instead of redressing their failed policies, the African National Congress have continued to throw good money after bad. They seem hell-bent on promoting immoral, unwise, and counterproductive policies on every level. They now seem heedless to the warnings of the catastrophic decolonization land reform policy of Joseph Stalin in the Ukraine and the Soviet Union in 1930s, which actually led to the starvation of millions of people. They seem oblivious to the disastrous consequence of the Holocaust of Rwanda in 1994, where the Hutu majority tried to wipe out the Tutsi minority through planned genocide, and the catastrophic land reform policies of Zimbabwe. In spite of all this catalogue of failures and disasters, the ANC now wants to follow in the footsteps of failure and remove the constitutional protections on private ownership property, for example, due process of law or quality before the law, and they want to be able to expropriate or confiscate farms from white farmers even without compensation. And considering that these farmers have poured generations of sacrifice and hard work into cultivating the wilderness and turning these into productive farms, somehow or another, white people who have been here for 12 generations, since 1652, are deemed to not be indigenous and not be our people, in the words of the president. He says, "We are going to give these farms to our people." Well, that is theft. If they go ahead with this ill-advised policy, it will not only undermine the food security of South Africa, meaning our ability to feed our people, but it will greatly increase unemployment. In fact, in Zimbabwe, the farmers, the 5,000 commercial farmers, were the biggest employers in the country. And of course, the if you took the employees along with the dependents, it resulted in affecting lives of millions of people. And they were the biggest earners of foreign exchange and the biggest exporters in the country. And so by closing down those farms, the result was the economic suicide of Zimbabwe. But that doesn't seem to bother the ANC right now. They want to expropriate farms even without compensation. If they go ahead with this ill-advised policy, it will increase unemployment. It will chase away investors who will see that there's no respect for private ownership, property or investment here. And it will also chase away employers, entrepreneurs and tourists. I mean, many tourists will be very loath to come as a result. The economic consequences and social catastrophe that would result from such a racist and lawless policy would be incalculable. It would represent the final breaking of faith with the reconciliation settlement made in 1994 to end the violence and the war and to basically have people lay down their weapons. It was on the basis of solemn agreements that in 1994 we had a peace and reconciliation agreement which brought an end to decades of war. So tearing up these solemn agreements, international agreements even, destroying the very Bill of Rights, which was meant to be the foundation for prosperity, reconciliation, and progress in this country, will have disastrous, long-reaching, catastrophic repercussions. You cannot violate private ownership property without destroying the essential foundation for all effective economies. This would result in an economic catastrophe. But it would appear that insane hatred will destroy this great country, and with it, it will destroy the last chance for Africa to show a viable, successful, working economy to the world. The disgrace that this would be to Africa as a whole, and the disillusionment that it would create amongst those who have poured their hearts and souls into building Africa up, would be catastrophic. South Africa would join the long list of failed African states. Yet another warning to outsiders to not even try to invest in a continent that does not respect private ownership of property, nor honor solemn agreements, bills of rights, or international treaties. So, is emotion to replace reason? Are slogans to overwhelm debate? Is expropriation to supersede economics? Are toy-toy zombie dances to replace work? Is race hatred to replace good neighborliness? These are questions we need to ask. If settlers who came centuries ago, like the Huguenots in 1688, and cultivate the wilderness of Olifantshoek into the vineyards of Franschhoek, if they are to be called colonists and invaders, are black migrants to Europe or America or Australia or South Africa, are they also to be called invaders and colonists? If people who've been here for generations can be described as not our people and they don't belong, then what hope is there for anybody anywhere in the world? Vilifying the victims and villains playing the victim card may work for a time, but ultimately it will come back to destroy the one playing this dangerous game. The malicious destruction of so many historic places and monuments, even graves and churches and homes, even entire forests being burned by arsonists, this is the path to national suicide. Destruction, for the sake of it. Envy, greed, hatred, malice, and jealousy. This does not build the kind of society any of us would want to live in, or have our children or grandchildren live in. These ill-advised policies of expropriating land without compensation is based upon a broad propaganda narrative of righting the wrongs of long ago and taking back that which was stolen. In a word, restitution. But who stole the land? Where was it stolen? From whom was it stolen? When was it stolen? How was it stolen? Facts ruin a good story. And the fact is that the Dutch settlers and the French Huguenots and the Voortrekkers, they purchased the land. They settled and developed the wilderness at great personal sacrifice. Truth does not fear investigation. Facts can ruin a good story. The Marxist revolutionaries and agitators are using propaganda to whip up hatred for their own political ends. Cheap politicking for cheap votes. However, if we to consider the real theft, the real theft taking place in our time, we would have to recognize that no one has stolen more from us than our government has. The greatest theft is from inflation, taxation, and corruption. The African Union calculates that over 25% of the gross domestic product, the GDP, of Africa is stolen every year by governments in Africa alone. So 25% of the total GDP, wealth of Africa, is stolen by corruption by governments in Africa every year. That is more than 10 times all the foreign aid that was received by Africa every year. In other words, 1,000% more than all the foreign aid we receive is stolen by governments through corruption every single year. If we could cut corruption down by just 10%, it would equal all the foreign aid poured into Africa every year. Imagine if we could eradicate 50% of the corruption. Imagine eradicating over 90% of the corruption. Inflation has devalued the South African rand to 1/500th of what it was back in 1980. When you talk about theft, there is no greater theft than a theft that is done by taxation, inflation, and corruption. So much of our hard work, so much of our ingenuity is stolen by exorbitant taxation and rampant corruption by an ANC government that is vastly greater than all the other causes of poverty and crime combined. Over 1 trillion rand is lost to corruption in South Africa every year, and that's according to the African Union statistics. It might be worse. How long are we going to accept the smokescreens, the scapegoats, the distractions, the disinformation of the criminals who are ruining this country? It is a fact that the middle letters of cancer are ANC, the Abortion, Nepotism and Corruption Party. Power cuts, electricity cuts by Eskom between 2008 and 2015 cost the South African economy over 300 billion rand. It's billion with a B. The additional diesel costs of Eskom to run their power stations due to human error at the Kubuk nuclear power station just in 2015 was estimated to be over 250 million rand per week, every week. Stage 3 load shedding power failures was estimated to cost the South African economy 80 billion rand per month. The severe water restrictions in Cape Town has led to a drastic decrease of the number of international tourists visiting our country. Last year, tourism accounted for 9% of our total South African economy, $35 billion. 87% of the small businesses in Cape Town have reported losing half their revenue due to water restrictions. Water Resource Partners estimates that 30% of the water in South Africa in urban areas is wasted just through leakages. Soweto residents have reported that major water delivery pipes have been leaking for years without the municipality even repairing them. 30% of our urban water just lost through leakages, which is incompetence by the municipal authorities. With the catastrophic failure of government schools, there's been a drastic increase in private and independent schools who do not receive any tax rebates, despite making an enormous amount of expense and sacrifice to build up these schools, and despite taking enormous amount of pressure and expense off state budgets who would have to be catering for them otherwise, these parents supporting private schools and homeschooling should get some kind of tax rebates, and yet they have to pay their taxes for state education without receiving any kind of benefit, and then they've still got to pay for the private education. That is not just. The war against whites in South Africa is also seen in economics through black economic empowerment, affirmative action, job reservation, racial quotas, all of which are designed to keep whites, and particularly white males, out of government and out of commercial employment. You're too male and too pale, is the message often heard. But the violent, sadistic, and brutal tortures, the vicious murders of farmers and their families defies description. Farm attacks in South Africa are 700 times higher than in any other country in the world. Farmers are being murdered at a rate over 4 times more than even the police. White South African farmers are experiencing the highest rates of violent crime anywhere in the world. It is more dangerous to be a farmer in South Africa than a bomb disposal expert in Afghanistan. AfriForum has noted the term farm murders is misleading, and the term farm terror and farm tortures are far more suitable. Farmers in South Africa are being murdered at a rate of 220 per 100,000 every year. The average murder rate per 100,000 of the population worldwide is 9. So 9 people per 100,000 are murdered every year worldwide, on average. In South Africa, a farmer is murdered at a rate of 220 per 100,000 every year. Any form of justice is incredibly rare. The criminal justice system in South Africa is spectacularly failing to effectively prosecute most of the perpetrators of these attacks. Farming family victims are often tied up, cut with machetes and pitchforks, burned with boiling water or hot irons, dragged behind vehicles, raped, mutilated in incomprehensible savagery. The South African Agricultural Union recorded in their areas 10,000 farm attacks and 1,541 murders between 1994 and 2008. The Transvaal Agricultural Union recorded 2,070 attacks and 1,266 murders between 1991 and 2009. The South African Chamber of Commerce and Industry calculates that every farm murder or attack cost the South African economy over 2 million rand annually. And this figure is based on the annual contribution to the agricultural sector to the country's gross domestic product. Yet, when Freedom Front Member of Parliament, Peter Groenewald, reported on the horrific tortures being inflicted on white farmers in South Africa today, he was greeted with jeers by ANC and EFF members of Parliament, and one ANC member of Parliament shouted, "Bury them alive." AfriForum has documented multiple cases of incitement to genocide and other menacing threats against whites on social media, including ANC councillor Bekankosi Mavelasi, who wrote, "Kill the Boer, kill the farmer," and Velapi Kumalo of the Gauteng Arts and Culture Department, "I want to cleanse this country of all white people. White people in South Africa deserve to be hacked and killed. You must be bushed alive," whatever that means, "and skinned, and your offspring used as garden fertilizer," he wrote on social media. Lavoyu Max Menziwe wrote, "I hate whites. Just get me a bazooka or AK-47 so I can do the right thing and kill these demon-possessed humans." Well, the Bible has a lot to say about hatred and malice, but also says, "Do not remove the ancient boundary land which your fathers have set." That's in Proverbs 22:28. "Do not remove the ancient landmark which your fathers have set." There are boundaries that have been set, and the people who have invested in these farms, whose family members, whose ancestors are buried there, who have poured generations of hard work and sacrifice into building up these farms, feeding the population, they should not just have their sacrifice and hard work and their property done away with by some vote of some political rabble-rousers in Parliament. Now, here's just a compilation of quotes and policies from ANC leaders. These are published statements made by African National Congress political leaders in South Africa. "All white people are criminals and should be treated as such. We need to take their property, deny them job opportunities, treat them like second-class citizens. White people are dogs. We need to sing songs about how they should be mowed down and murdered. White people are in the minority, and that means they have fewer rights than the rest of us." Absolutely, that is how democracy works. "And if they dare to protest against this view, we must tell them to keep their mouths shut because they are racist to simply getting what they deserve." And those are all quotes from ANC leaders. So what can we do? Well, we need to do something. And this is first and foremost an information war. We need to be informed. My people are destroyed from lack of knowledge. So first and foremost, we need to set the record straight. Obtain and read Sketches from South African History, a book that I produced just recently in order to set the record straight there. Read Biblical Principles for Africa, which gives solutions to our situation. Renaissance or Reformation. These are three books that would be helpful. Sketches from South African History, Biblical Principles for Africa, a Renaissance or Reformation. And then view the video Agenda 2 and Bitter Harvest, which is a drama on the Holodomor in the Ukraine. Visit the Henry Morton Stanley School of Christian Journalism website and Facebook page, and Africa Christian Action website and Facebook page, and Young Reformers Out to Change the World Facebook page. Do not be afraid of sudden terror, nor of the trouble that comes from the wicked. For the Lord will be your confidence. and will keep your foot from being caught, we read in Proverbs 3:25. So we need to be informed. We need to be interceding. We need to be involved in practical action. We need to invest in workable solutions, and we need to implement workable strategies for security and survival. A prudent man foresees evil. So pray, publish, prepare, and protest. We need to stand up. We need to speak out. We need to step up. We need to be armed and alert. Stock up supplies. Have backup plans. Secure your home and farm, your church and your mission. We need to prepare for lawlessness, power failures, water mains being cut. We need to know our neighbors and help one another. There's strength in unity. Watch. Stand fast in the faith. Be brave. Be strong. We need to speak up on community radio stations, radio phone-in programs. Make use of every opportunity. Write letters to the editor. Write letters to your elected representatives. And write articles for your local Christian community papers. We need to contribute to or set up webs and blogs and social media that will deal with these issues. Organize public meetings and film screenings for films like Agenda 2 and Bitter Harvest. There are some foreign journalists who've done exposés on the farm murders in South Africa, including Lauren Southern from America and Kate Hopkins from Britain. Find their social media, find their websites, find their articles and their videos, and let people understand from their documentaries. That's Lauren Southern from America and Kate Hopkins from Britain. They are two journalists I know who've done exposés on the situation. We need to also be obtaining the Security and Survival Handbook, which I just recently produced, just been published this year. Security and Survival Handbook deals with practical solutions to protect our families, our farms, our futures. We need to rescue. We need to redeem. We need to restore, reform, and revive. We need to help build community support structures, support civil defense, neighborhood watch associations, get networked, work for decentralization. Let's support independence for the Cape movement. Contact the Suidlanders, find out what they're doing in your area and how you can get involved. Find groups in the area that you can network with for both information and mutual support. Visit our website, frontlinemissionsa.org, for more input and resources that we can use in order to speak up for those who are suffering. Search on our website for articles like Practical Solutions for South Africa, Zimbabwe Celebrates as Mugabe Falls, looking at the failure of land reform in Zimbabwe. The Battle for South Africa explains some of the background. The scripture says in Nehemiah 4, verse 14, "Do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord, great and awesome, and fight for your brethren, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses." God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. Submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. God bless, and till next time, keep strong, keep alert, keep armed, and keep vigilant. Good night.